Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Camille from sunny California, and you're listening to the Coffee Chat with Camille show, which is a podcast series that interviews various guests about real life topics for people who love to learn. Hi, welcome to Coffee Chat with Camille. The topic of our show today is the unbearable pain of losing a child with author Carol Slutsky. And let me read a little bit about her. Carol is a mother of two daughters and grandmother of two granddaughters, but she's also a victim of the worst loss a person can have. She is a parent who lost her child and experienced the mental and physical pain of grief. Through devotion to faith, she reached out to God to help survive. Facts about our author, Carol. She currently resides in Florida with her husband, Dr. Dennis Slutsky. I hope I'm not messing up the last name, but I'll ask her. And after 30 years. Carol had a calling to share her journey of learning how to live with peace and well-being. Her story will make you cry, laugh, connect, understand, learn, sympathize, appreciate, and believe in hope. Over the course of the years, she's gathered her expertise, knowledge, and talent and put it to use for her recovery and to benefit others she loves. Professionally, Carol is an accomplished entrepreneur in business and creative arts. Okay, and then let me see. Okay, let me go ahead and begin our interview, okay, because Carol is holding on the line. Let's see. Hello, Carol. Welcome.
Hello, Camille, for inviting me on. Oh, hi.
You're welcome. It's such a pleasure. I'm so happy to have you here. And I want to go ahead and get started with our interview so that our audience can learn more about you. Okay. So our first question is, Wednesday, March 18th, 1992 was an entirely chaotic and stressful day. Can you tell us a little bit about what you call in the book the beginning of the end?
Yes. Well, that day, actually, I had so much going on in my life. And that day I was preparing to sell my house, my condo, and I was moving into my future husband's home. We were getting married in 2 weeks. And I was excited. I was... Everything was going good in my life. I have two daughters. Both of them were happy that I was getting remarried, and they loved my future husband. I'll just call him Denny. That's, you know, his name. And he's in the book a lot. I'll tell you, that man was like, I wound up calling him my Band-Aid. If I hadn't have had him, I don't know if I would have had the strength to survive. And I really found out, I'll just make a point here, that it's so important, so very important that you reach out, and anyone that's in your family that you're close to, a friend, during a tragedy, the first thing you do is you go and you seek out help. You seek out someone that you could be with and lean on. That's so important. But that day was just... the last time I talked to my daughter, Paula, and that's why, you know, I referred it as being so tragic, because I never talked to her again. And it was the beginning of my hell, and I had to be strong, and I had no idea. That evening was the last time I talked with her, that I had no idea that, you know, I would never be able to hear her voice again. And so that's that was the beginning of my change, beginning of my new life for me.
Okay. And then how did you feel when you got the call from the hospital and the doctor said Paula had been admitted to the ER early in the morning at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, that was, I got the telephone call at about, I think it was like around 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. And the first thing, this man on the telephone, he was very cool, very nonchalant. It was like, it was almost like a robot just asked to speak with Carol. I wasn't Slosky yet, so I wasn't married yet, so he was my name. And I said, this is she, and he just went right into it, right into what happened. He said, your daughter's been admitted to the emergency room, and she's had a pulmonary embolism, which is a blood clot that went to the lungs, and that she was in the ICU and was in critical condition. And he advised, you know, asked me if I could get there to the hospital, and I said, I was a robot. When he talked to me, I heard what he said, but it was like I was living a dream. It was just like I listened to his voice, and it was like what he was saying was registering, but it was like beyond belief, just beyond belief. And he made it very quick. He gave me a few details. I remember he did say to me that she went into a coma, and now we have her on equipment, and she is she's on the critical list. And if she survives, this is what he told me on the telephone, if she survives, she has, first of all, only 5% chance that she will make it through this. And if she survives, she will have 95% chance that she will be very, very, what's the word that I want to use? She will not be, you know, she'll have brain damage, a lot of brain damage. So I just listened. So he hung up the phone on me, and to make a long story short, you know, I got to the hospital, and I had my future husband, Denny, take me. And I go in, you know, I really kind of like go with a step through when I write the book. I wanted my audience to understand a little bit more of the detail about how I felt and how I even felt about getting to the hospital. Can you believe it? At the beginning, I didn't want anybody to drive me. I was going to get into the car myself and drive. That is how numb I was. To think that with that on my plate, that I would drive, you know, for about maybe 20 miles to get to a hospital by myself. Well, anyway, we wound up that my husband, Denny, did take me. And when we got to the hospital, I went to the ICU. I found that the lady that was sitting at the desk in the ICU was very cool, very professional. And she asked me to have a seat. I told her who I was. She asked me to have a seat. I remember that the waiting room was filled with a lot of people. And I remember saying to her, no, I won't sit down. I want to see my daughter. I want to see my daughter now. And she just said again, please have a seat. And I got louder. I want to see my daughter now. She quickly picked up the phone, and before you knew it, I had someone come out to the waiting room and escorted me and Denny into the ICU room where my daughter was. When I got in there, she was in a bed. She was filled with equipment, loaded with equipment, just like you would see on TV. in a emergency room program, just equipment all over, and there she was. I walked up to her, and her eyes were half open. They were dilated. She was breathing via the equipment. Her chest was going up and down, up and down. And so that was the beginning. I mean, that was, of course, the beginning of my nightmare.
Yes. And then how did you deal with the guilt of not going to her house the evening before when you talked to Paula?
Well, you know, I didn't, of course, at that moment or even probably that whole day feel any guilt. It was when I got home at the end of the day in that evening that my mind started working and I started thinking, and I was thinking, well, she called me the night before. She said she wasn't feeling well. She was 24 years old. She wasn't a baby. She was, you know, a young adult. And I did oversee, you know, she did have medical problems, so I was always there for her. And I told her, I said, if you have any problems, either call me or go to the emergency room. Well, she chose to go to the emergency room. And so when I was home thinking about everything that happened that day and thinking about my daughter in ICU on the critical list, with a flat line, they had on the monitor, it was flat line. I said, oh my gosh, why didn't I go and pick her up and take her myself to the hospital? I still think that is a parent's first reaction to an emergency or to some bad news, is that you want to blame yourself. You know, you say, what could I have done? Because we have that parental instinct in us to do anything and everything we can for our children. And that's what was going on in my head. Yeah, I was feeling guilt.
Yes, and then mentally and emotionally, you were very quiet, tired, and heartbroken. You kept your emotions, thoughts, and feelings under control in front of everyone else around you. Internally, how were you really feeling?
Well, that really was unbelievable to me, that how I could do that. I was numb and I was sick inside, but yet I showed, it was like I was acting normal to other people. You know, it was like I was holding everything inside of me until I got alone. And that's when I broke down and cried. I call it a shock. It was a shock that I was in, and I never, ever experienced anything like that. And I have to be honest, Camille, I never experienced anything like that since then. And I hope I never will.
And then how was the decision process of letting Paula off the life support system?
Well, according to, this is the way, what I understood at the time. Once they put you on life support, according to the state of Illinois, what was told to me is that you have 48 hours. They have to have her on, the patient on for 48 hours. So I had to sit there with her in the ICU for 48 hours. I had to witness this condition. And I'll tell you, and I'll tell your viewers, that I did not feel her soul. I sat there and I did not feel, she felt like an empty vessel to me. I knew she was deceased. I've been around other people that have died. My father, he passed away. And, you know, it was like I just knew. I didn't feel her soul anywhere. It wasn't there in her body. It wasn't anywhere around me. And I even said to Denny, I said, I can't believe this. I don't feel. It's just like she's an empty vessel. And he agreed. I mean, and several of the people that are close to me that came to the hospital during those 48 hours, they also said basically the same thing. It was just like she was just a vessel that they were pumping air into.
And then after the service and everything that immediately followed after her passing or transition, how were the first couple of months for you?
Of course, a couple of months is nothing for healing. It's just nothing. It's like seconds. I was just so sick, so emotionally devastated, so emotionally still in shock. You know, this loss is so traumatic that it's like you don't even want to try to explain it because that's how much it hurts. And what I am trying to do is to reach out to a lot of people that haven't, thank God they have, for the moms and dads out there that haven't experienced this, thank goodness, and I hope you never do. But what I'm trying to express as I write in my book, that it hurts so bad that no one can understand it unless they went through it. And that's something in talking to other parents for over the course of 30 years, they agree with me. The parents who have lost a child, they say the same thing, that the only ones who really understand are the ones who are in the same similar situation as them where they lost a child. And I do go into detail on all of that from my experience of what I went through, the steps I had to take, the understanding. And Camille, I will say this, and I mean it from the very, very bottom of my heart. If I did not have God in my life, I would not be here today. I just wouldn't be. And God got me through my faith. I changed after my daughter died. I thought I believed in God before then. Let me tell you something. I hung on so strongly to my faith and to pray to get through this, to stronger, lead me. I would ask, I would talk to God to lead me, to please, please lead me. Tell me what I need to do to survive. Tell me how to be. And without that, I don't know, I just can't imagine. To me, it wouldn't be worth living without God.
And then you just kind of touched on this question, but when did you realize that healing was possible?
Healing came in very, very short spurts. And I recognized the healing process when I would have a moment of happiness, just a moment. It was like it could be some place that I was at, seeing a rainbow, for example, because I would relate to the rainbow as something that Paula brought to my attention when she was alive. There's a story in the book that I talk about involving a kitten that she wanted me to just take in and raise, because she was a little girl then. And Bootsy is the cat's name. And Bootsy lived for a long time. I think he lived 16, 18 years. But there's a story about the rainbow comes into play. So when I started seeing a rainbow in the sky, and I got a glimmer of hope, I got a glimmer of happiness, that is the beginning of healing. I didn't know it at the time. But I had all those years. You know, Camille, 30 years is a long time. It's a long, long time. Yeah. And looking back, I see that this did not happen overnight, my healing. Am I healed right now? You never, ever really totally get 100%. But I'm going to be honest. Yes, I'm happy. I have a lot to live for. I thank God that he helped me get through. I had a lot of illnesses, a lot of sicknesses. I had surgery several times, major surgeries. I wound up getting cardiomyopathy, which is a heart disease. And I really blame that to a broken heart because they couldn't find out why I got it. So it was not a ischemic is what it's called when they don't know why you got this heart disease. Well, I asked my cardiologist, I said, do you think it's because I have a broken heart? And this is like 20 years later, or 15, 20 years later, I wind up with cardiomyopathy. And he said, it's possible. There's many, many documents stating that broken heart syndrome is, you know, it is one of the reasons for heart disease. So, but I had a lot to deal with my health over the course of 30 years. So there is so much that went into play, but as time went by and as felt the Holy Spirit at one point tell me of ways that I should heal, I could heal. I had to use myself as a vehicle to make myself happy. I love art. I love to paint. So I went back and started painting again. And this is, you know, right away I did that. I did that within the first year after she died. I started painting, and that was really, really like therapy for me. But there's like one thing after another that I write about as far as what I had to do to survive. And every time I got just a little glimmer of hope, a little glimmer of happiness, that was a little bit of healing I had because I started thinking of other things. It wasn't all about Paula. I had another daughter, and I loved her. She supported me. She was a backbone to me. And I said, you know, I've got another child. And this is another important thing that you have to do to survive. You have to put yourself into your other children if you have them. Thank God. If you do have other children, thank God. Get on your hands and knees and thank the Lord that you've got these children. Put yourself into them and put yourself into your husband, into your, if you don't have a husband, then someone that's close to you. But you must have a good support team behind you. It helps.
Yes, and then I have just two more questions. Mm-hmm. When did you decide you were going to write the book and why name it 30? And then knowing your Christian God and that the Holy Spirit is for real, do you think you will see Paula again in heaven?
Well, I'm going to start with that last question. Do I think? Yes,
yes.
I do. Yeah, I really believe in heaven, and I've had experiences in the last 30 years that just confirms my faith in heaven, and I choose to believe that. I'm having a better life believing than not believing in God and heaven, and my mentor. I have a mentor through all of this, and that's the Blessed Virgin Mary. And I think she's played a big role in my healing process because I've been able to pray to her to please go to her son and ask him to help me. And it's through the Holy Rosary. I've been praying the Holy Rosary every day. It's become a habit to me. And I choose not to miss it because I know that when I pray, the Holy Rosary, if something goes wrong the next day, I could say, well, wait a minute, I said my rosary, so things will work out for me. And a lot of the healing is based on your habits, what you do. If you choose some good things to do, get rest on your soul, and you will get stronger. Camille, what was the first question? I think I went off the topic.
No, you're right on topic. It's okay. And then when did you decide you were going to write the book and why name it 30?
All right. When Well, I, first of all, I never thought I'd ever write a book. And I still can't believe I wrote a book. And I don't think I'll ever write another book. But saying that, I would probably maybe 10 years ago, I thought, you know, someday I'm going to write a book about Paula. But I wound up not writing about Paula. I wound up writing about my survival, because as every year went by, I found that to be more and more important to other people. And it's that the stepping stones that I had to go through to survive this, if I could pass that on and somebody will listen to me and I could save their life or make them happy, I'm going to say, thank goodness I was able to write this book. So that's then I moved to Florida a year and a half ago, and we have alumni out here because it is Florida. I sat there one day and I said, you know what, I'm retired. I'm 78 years old. I just had a birthday, December 29th. So I was sitting out in my lanai and saying, geez, this is so beautiful out here. I'm going to write a book. So I put my paintbrush down. I was still painting. I thought, I'm going to quit painting. I took a sabbatical. I've been writing this book for 16 months. And I can't begin to tell you that every day that I wrote, my mind would open up more and more. And I would get up the next day and go to my little office, and I would read what I wrote, and I would say, oh, is that beautiful? It almost makes me want to cry now, because I say, how did I come up with that? Mm-hmm. How did I think of that?
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful. I even started writing some poetry in there in between my paragraphs, and I don't know, it just was one moment after another that was beautiful. And I do believe that writing my book for me was part of my healing. It's almost like, I'm not going to say the grand finale of my healing, because I'll be healing till the day I die. And but I think it's made me, again, a stronger person.
Yeah. Carol? I want to thank you so much for being my guest. And I am deeply sorry for your loss. I thought your interview is very important. And so many of us experience loss, including my own mother, who, my sister passed. And so about 2 days from now, actually. And so I thought that... And for all people who have experienced a loved one, in particular a child that has transitioned, I feel that your story, your book, and your message is one of healing. And I have no role, like a whole lot to say, except again, thank you so very much. For your hopeful message. And I have to say goodbye for now, Carol. Also, lastly, I do have something. Thank you so much. And also, your art is beautiful. Your cover art on the book is beautiful. I bought it, so I'm still reading it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and that's a real eagle here in Naples, Florida, that I found on Facebook from a photographer.
Yes.
So I got his permission to paint it, and that's the eagle that swoops down and picks up Paula's soul up. Yeah, I got a poem in there that goes with it.
Yes, I know. I read it, and then I looked at the cover, and I said, my God, he captured this imagery perfectly as an image, because I'm an artist. I'm an artist also.
Oh, you are too,
Yes. And so, again, thank you so very much, Carol.
You're welcome.
And,
thank you.
And okay, bye for now. God bless you.
Bye-bye. God bless you,
bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye, everyone. Thank you. Oh, the name of Carol Slosky's book. Did I put it? I hope I put it in here. Let's see, 30. I think it's called 30. And what I'll do is I will put the link. It looks like I didn't put it in the description, okay, for the listeners. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Right? Bye for now.